A lot of people last time said that I was speaking so fucking fast. I'm sorry. I know. I naturally speak really fast. In Serbian, I'm speaking really, really fast. And then when I get really excited about telling a story, I go really, really fast and read really fast. And that's mainly the reason why the last episode was that chaotic. And also, I don't notice that I'm speaking really fast until I'm editing. So when I'm editing, that's like the finish line, and I there is no way to correct that then. So I'm going to try to speak a little bit normal today, a little bit slower. So welcome, hi, how are you doing? It's really cold here. I'm freezing right now. Like, the wind is blowing so hard, and it's 19 degrees Celsius outside, and they said that by Friday, on Friday I have to go to Belgrade again. And you know what happened last time when I went to Belgrade by the cold weather. I got really sick, and now my throat is again kind of like a little bit raspy, and they said that on Friday it's going to be 11 degrees Celsius, but the wind will stop. Like, we are in that area, like the central Serbia, like central northish Serbia, where we have this really strong winds coming from Romania and Bulgaria, from the mountains over there, that's called Kosova. Everyone in Balkans probably knows of Kosova. It's really strong wind that happens only by the winter and the fall and winter, and not in summer when we need it the most. Like, it's a really, really hard wind, and this house is fucking old, and like the windows are old, and everything comes through them. You can just hear, like, in the middle of the night going like through the house. It's really creepy, first of all, and the second of all, it's really cold, and the winters here are unbearable. In my room where I'm at, and my mom sometimes in winter sleeps in my room, because this is the only isolated room that's at the end of the house, so it has multiple doors and rooms in front of it, so it does not get that much cold. However, right now I'm cold, and I have my scented candle lit up, and it's the scent of roasted almonds, and it smells so fantastically. I have my tea that's not hot anymore, because I've been writing the script for today's story. I've been finishing it right now, because I couldn't manage to finish it yesterday. And I have my Christmas lights going on. Listen, I don't take my Christmas lights off during the year, because, first of all, I don't want to. It looks nice. It's not like colorful Christmas lights. It's just white string lights going all around the house. And in my room, if you follow me on social media, you know that in my room I have this giant tree that's taller than me, and it has 400 like lights, and that's the main source of light in my room, because the chandelier gives me like the weird lightning. It's a long story, but I have that lit on right now, and I'm feeling so cozy and so ready for today's story and for today's episode. And yes, that's it. How are you? I'm hoping you said good, because why not? Why to be unhappy? Be happy, people. Oh, and my dog is on the bed beside me, and he is in his dog blanket. So yeah, that's on that. I don't have any more updates, I guess. I don't believe I do. It's cold. We are cozy. And let's start with this episode. Also, I never mentioned in the last episode that it's the beginning of the spooky season, and my episode came on October 2nd, which is already in the spooky season, but I recorded it on the September 30th, when the spooky season has not been there officially. So now it's officially spooky season, so welcome to the spooky season. And the Halloween this year falls on Sunday. That means I will have an episode on Halloween, so I need to think about something special for that day because I want to have a special episode on Halloween. So, yep, check us out on Halloween. So today's story, it's really interesting. It's not that much shocking. It is shockingly, but you know, it's interesting. So today we are talking about, oh my God, it's almost 6 minutes and I'm going into the episode. Oh my God, who am I? Who is she? He, they, whatever. I always pronounce he, him. So if you ever wondered about that. Today we're talking about the murder of Carla Walker. You have most probably heard about this case because it was in the headlines everywhere for the past year and a half. And that's because DNA testing proved the killer 45 years later after the murder. So that's really fascinating point. Let's just start. So it's the September 2020, last year, like a full year ago, Glenn Samuel McCurley was just a normal 77-year-old guy having the time of his life. I actually don't know if he had the time of his life, but I know I have a better intro, okay? So he was a 77-year-old guy when police knocked on his door and they wanted to speak to him about the murder of Carla Walker that happened 45 years ago. And he was one of the persons who was already the person of interest or the suspect in this case just after it happened, because he had the same gun that the magazine of that gun, like the holder for bullets, had been found on the crime scene. Like the same, it was like a 22 caliber Rogan, I believe. So he was already the person of interest and he was questioned, and he said that at the time when the murder happened, he told that his wife has gone to West Texas to visit family and that his 22 Ruger pistol had been stolen about 6 weeks earlier. That was the time of the murder, and that he didn't report it because he was an ex-convict who had been to jail for car theft. And he also told investigators that on the day of the murder, he worked until 4:30 p.m. as a truck driver, and he had been off work for the following day, and they let him free. So now when they wanted to speak to him about the murder again, he said, yes, of course, come in, and he repeated the story. And they were like, yes, we are here because there are some new leads in the case, and we are talking about, we're talking with every suspect that has been suspected in the past. So we're just, this is like just a normal routine control. And he, they asked him to give them a DNA test to sample to, so they could swab his mouth and get a DNA sample. And he agreed, and they took the DNA sample, and that was that. So, what happened? Who was Carla Walker, and what happened with Carla Walker? Carla Walker was born on January 31st, 1957, as one of the seven children. That's really fascinating to me, like, when families have so much children, because I'm the only child. So, like, seven children, oh my God. She was, quote-unquote, well-behaved young woman. She was described as one of the popular girls in school. She loved school. Like, when I hear people love school, like, who loves school? She had great grades, and she played tennis, and she was part of the cheerleaders. And, of course, she was a part of a cheerleaders. She also planned going to summer school that year when that happened, so she finished semester earlier. And she also had a boyfriend who was called Rodney McCoy, and he was a year older. He was 18, and he was a senior at the same school, and they were, like, quote-unquote, the popular high school sweethearts. He was also, obviously, in the school football team, because how many cliches you can have in a story. They were dating for about a year in that time, and Rodney was often at her house and her parents loved him, so a lucky guy, I guess. Once a week on Friday, they would go on a date at the movies or to hang out with some friends, and they were living the dream, you would say. Relationship back then were so much better, like almost everything was better back in the days, to be honest. These children these days like have 15 years and they already have sex and five relationships behind them. And on the February 17th, their school held a Valentine's Day party or dance, as you wish. And Carla and Rodney were attending, of course, as a popular high school sweetheart couple. And they were attending that Valentine's Day dance. And their friends said that they had the great time, especially Carla, who danced and laughed all night long. But sadly, that night was the night when she was last seen alive. So we jump into off the cliff really, really fast. After the party ended, she and Rodney got into their car and they dropped off another couple. And they stopped at the bowling alley for Carla to use the bathroom. So this was like maybe 1:30 a.m. And she returned to the car and they started talking, kissing, and like, you know, teenager stuff. Teenager scared the living shit out of me. And suddenly the door swung open. Now, Rodney thought that it was this couple of boys from the school which he had argument the day before while they were on a date. This dance was held on Sunday, or it was Saturday, I'm not sure. On Friday they went on a date, he and Carla and him. So while they were on a date, one of that boys started hitting up on Carla, and he had a little argument with Rodney about that. So he thought that those were those boys, but however, it was this weird looking man and he was holding a gun. The man started screaming at him that he was going to kill him, and he fired a shot into the car. Luckily for Rodney, the bullet just grazed his head. Then the man started hitting him with fists in the head, and as Rodney started protecting his head with his hands, the man pulled screaming Carla out of the car and threw her at the ground. Then he fired another shot, but missed Rodney again, and then Rodney got out of the car, and he tried to get to Carla, but the man smacked him with the gun in his head, so he pistoled him. That's the new thing I learned from this story, that when someone knocks you unconscious with a pistol, it means he pistoled you. Okay, so Rodney fell unconscious. And he later said that the last words he heard before losing his consciousness were the man saying, quote unquote, "You're going with me, sweetie." This just gave me such a fucking chills. And Carla was crying and saying, quote unquote, "I'll come with you, just don't shoot him." And he lost his consciousness. And when he regained consciousness, Carla and the man were gone, and Rodney rushed to her house and told her parents what just happened. Her sister allegedly said later that he was screaming, "They got her, they got her." They drove back to the bowling hall, to the bowling alley, but they couldn't find anything except her purse, and they called the police. Rodney described the man as a white man in his early 20s with a strong accent, which suggested that he was from the Southwest and that he was wearing a brown cowboy hat that had fallen off his head while he was beating him. And he said that the man was also wearing the green shiny sleeveless shirt and that his hair was medium short tucked behind his ears. So Carla was pronounced missing, and the search began. The police interview everyone, her family, friends, students that were at the ball that evening, the teacher who was the chaperone of the ball, like everyone. And one guy said that he saw what potentially could have been the kidnapper's car sitting at the exit lane of the parking lot of the bowling alley, and that it could be like a green Chevrolet. On the following Monday, they already had the first suspect, and it was the unnamed man who was at the bowling alley that night, who had the similar description and was acting aggressively that evening. He also had the hair tucked behind his ears, and he had a gun. But he passed the polygraph test, so we don't even know how what his name was. In the meantime, they combed the whole area in search of Carla, but she was nowhere to be found. They were searching. Did I even say which city this was? This was happening in Texas, and it was the town named. Not sure what's the town name, but it was in the around the lake Bembrook. So I don't know if that's the name, the town's name Bembrook, or just the lake Bembrook. Not sure, but I'm really sorry about that. So they searched and combed the whole area in search of Carla, but she was nowhere to be found. They were searching for her on the horses, on foot, even by helicopter, but unsuccessfully. And many local citizens also joined and volunteered in the search party. And even the FBI got involved. Sadly, several days into the search, her body was found near the ditch in the Lake Bembrook, and it was believed that the body was placed there the day before, since this area was thoroughly searched the previous days. And the autopsy revealed that she had been beaten, tortured, raped, and strangled to death. So, the worst of the worst. Toxicology reports also showed that she has been injected with morphine, and she was strangled to death. She was... Yeah, I said that. She was already strangled. Okay. It was believed that she was killed on Monday. So she was alive the whole Sunday, and she was killed on Monday and dropped off on Wednesday. Police had many suspects. Firstly, they believed it was Tommy Ray Neeland, a 25-year-old mechanic who was already charged with kidnapping a girl. He kidnapped a girl, but he released her after she begged him to do so, with a cross in her hands that she wore on her neck. She was holding the cross, and she begged him to release her, and he did it. He was also charged with two accounts of murder of two hitchhikers, a couple where he raped and killed the girl, and beat and slit the throat of her boyfriend. So, yep, before dumping them beside the road. He was also suspected of a murder of his neighbor who was abducted while her children were sleeping, and the killer took her to the woods where he raped and strangled her and left her body beside a highway. So, the piece of shit. Rodney, Carla's boyfriend, identified him as the man who attacked them that night in a lineup. So they lined up a few people, and he recognized him, and he said that it was him. However, he never admitted of abducting and killing Carla Walker, but he did admit of killing the hitchhiker couple and his neighbor. He strongly denied that he killed Carla. The local church pastor said that Neeland was attending the church event in another city with six other people from their church at the time of the abduction, and that was confirmed, so he had an alibi. The only piece of jewelry that was missing from Carla's body was the promise ring that Rodney gave her, and her parents believed that her killer was someone who knew her, and he was secretly in love with her and mad at her relationship with Rodney. So they would have killed Rodney, but not her. But whatever. The police dismissed this as that her ring could have fallen off her hand pretty easily while struggling. He took the polygraph test, this Neeland guy, but the results were inconclusive, and he was convicted of two life sentences in the murders of hitchhiking couple and later also his neighbor. And he remained the main suspect for several months, but they had no evidence linking them to this crime. And he also had an alibi, so... Yep. They said it was not him. They wanted to pin him down for this, but they couldn't. He was later released on parole. He was... convicted of 3 life sentences for this hitchhiking couple and his neighbor, and he served only like 18 years and was released on parole, but he was arrested again for violating his parole, but he was again released later, and now he lives in Texas without any more known committed crimes. So he is a free man, basically. He is on parole, but he's not in jail, and he has 3 life sentences. So he falls off the story, out of the story. They also questioned our guy who I talked about in the beginning, McCurley. I just realized he's called McCurley. He had the same type of the gun, but he claimed he lost it and reported to the authorities because he was already convicted in the past. Whatsoever, they questioned him. He was the person with the interest, and they released him because they didn't have any evidence linking him to anything. So Rodney took 2 more polygraph tests. He passed both of them, and he even went under psychosis and psychosis, and he even went under hypnosis. But his statements about that night never changed. So he was definitely telling the truth. 2 years after the events happened, Carla's family started receiving strange phone calls, but it was never concluded where they came from. The phone calls were like the person would call them and just stay silent. They never spoke anything, and the family believed that it was probably someone who had something to do with Carla's death. Several years later, a man who was already serving his sentence in prison in Tennessee for not paying the child support confessed to the police that he did kill a woman in Bangkok years before. However, his story had a lot of inconsistencies with Carla's murder, and the authorities didn't believe him, basically. They claimed that he probably just saw the information online and he was seeking the attention. Like, I understand there are many sick people out there, but claiming you killed someone with a possibility to get a life sentence just for the people to run around you and speak to you and ask you to... Listen. Go get some help, okay? And then another man named Jimmy also confessed to the murder. He was charged but released a few months later because he confessed that he was depressed because he broke up with his girlfriend, and because he was depressed, he made a false confession. What is wrong with people? What is wrong with people? And this case sadly remained cold case for 45 years. Until... Dun, dun, dun. Now, we jump all the way back to 2017, when police released a 45-year-old letter to the public in hopes it will lead to new informations. The letter was found in March of 2017, and it was indicated that the author of the letter knew something about the murder. The letter was mailed the days after the death, but it was quote-unquote lost in the paperwork. Part of the letter was destroyed. I don't know if it was sent like that, destroyed, or it was destroyed later. But if it was like lost, it was not in the evidence box. It was like lost in the paperwork. It's possible that someone from the police knew something and kind of like ditched the letter. But it's also possible that it came. Destroyed, so they just tossed it around. But the most important part was missing, and that's why probably it was not in the evidence bucket, and that's the name of the killer was missing, and it said, like, quote-unquote, Dash killed Carla Walker in Benbrook. It's hard to say, but it's true, end quote. In April of 2020, the Oxygen Network covered the story, and there it was revealed that now, when technology developed, it could finally be possible to test the DNA found on her clothing, especially on her bra, in 1974. By the time this show aired, the DNA tests were already undergoing, and finally, In September 2020, police knocked at the door of the Glenn Samuel McCurley, the guy who claimed his gun was stolen, the guy from the beginning of the story, who was now just a normal 77-year-old guy having the time of his life, and arrested him for the murder of Carla Walker. You see, they were following him from the day the DNA test pointed in his direction, waiting for him to leave his DNA somewhere so they could collect the DNA and run it through the system to confirm it. And they finally got it from his trash bag he left out, and the DNA test matched completely. In August of 2020, they visited him at his house, where he again repeated the same story about his gun being stolen. However, he agreed to give his DNA. They asked him to give his DNA because they can officially pin him down and without interrupting his life, like, because they were following him and they practically stole his DNA from him. But now, when he agreed to give him the DNA, they could officially pin him down, like, legally. They arrested him because it was a complete match. He firstly denied. He repeated the story over and over again about his gun being stolen. He pleaded not guilty, but later in the game, he changed his plea to guilty and confessed of strangling Carla Walker. And it was also looked into his possible connection with several mysterious deaths in the area in the time of Carla's murder in the similar manner. Like, few girls, like 3 years after her murder, were found naked, beaten, strangled, and raped by the street, but they don't have any evidence linking him with those cases. Like, they don't even have his DNA for that. And Carla's brother, the only member of her close family who is still alive, sadly, like, her mother and father died, because this has been a cold case for 45 years, and even possibly more, 46 years probably. Now, even maybe 47, because 2021 was happening in 1974, yeah, 47 years. He was the only member of her close family who is still alive, and he said that he forgave him. And this case is still ongoing, and it's still not finished. He's arrested, but he's in captivity, but his trial has not begun yet, so he possibly could die and never get convicted of this. It's really sad, but it's finally, we have the name, and that's also what the brother said, that they finally have the name and the face of the killer after so many years. And that's enough, kind of like, for her death. So yeah, that is the end of the story. The case is still ongoing, and with God's help, we'll have the ending of this case, and this case could finally be closed after so many years. And yeah, that's that. I hope you liked the story. I hope you liked my telling of the story, not this story itself. If you want, you can follow the podcast on Instagram at FreakedOutPodcast or on Twitter at FreakedPodcast. Or if you choose to support us on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/FreakedOutPodcast. Or you can follow me anywhere at Fabian Adams, but instead of a B, it's a 6. So Fay6EnAdams. And that would be that. Stay safe. Don't go on a dates and don't kiss in an empty parking lot in the middle of the night. And yeah, that's that. Thank you so much for listening and for supporting my podcast. I'll see you in the next episode. And now I have to really think and really prepare for the Halloween episode. Like, I want that episode to be really special. So, okay. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. Bye.